You're listening to Canter with Scott Hillier.
Hello and welcome to Canter. Thank you for joining us. I'm Scott Hillier. I'm back after a bit of a hiatus, but keen to bring you some cool content back online, guys. And I've got a friend in Puerto Rico, Javier Carrell. Javier, you're from a company called Ariaterra. Tell us a little bit about yourself and what you're doing in the cannabis industry, mate.
Hey, hi, Scott. Thank you for inviting us to your podcast. We started the business about 3 years ago. I have a degree as an architect, but we've been in the business construction for about 17 years. So about 3 years ago, we were hired for a company to build one of their growing facilities. Because we did a lot of commercial construction in the United States, we were familiar with all the materials and all the procedures to build a pharmaceutical, basically. So the cool thing about Puerto Rico, because it's an island, it's very hot and it's very humid. So that becomes very hostile for cannabis plants to grow outside. So the advantage of that is basically no one can grow anything outside. So that closed a market to being indoor. And because of those challenges, it becomes very, very expensive to grow cannabis in Puerto Rico. So the cool part of that is you don't have many competition. In Puerto Rico, there is some shortage because there is not many growing facilities that can produce right now, because most of them, they underestimate the power needed for these growing facilities. So the first project we finished about 2 years ago. It's been running. And this year, they start expanding second phase. So they are the few. There is only 27 growing facilities in Puerto Rico that they are producing, but they are very, very small facilities.
That's really interesting.
Do you have any questions?
It's really cool that you had that, that introduction to a grow facility beforehand. You know, you got to see the inner workings of what you're doing. Obviously, having a background in construction and architecture, you were able to identify problems with the initial build that you did for another facility. You're able to gain some information off that. That's really cool. So familiarizing yourself with building construction and architecture is one thing, but then getting your head around the cultivation processes, the protected cropping aspect of what your clients were doing, was there a learning curve there to really figure out the process that they're going through and what sort of requirements were really there for producing top shelf cannabis?
Yes. So, you know, everything is a learning curve. The first project that we took, we made a lot of mistakes.
Yeah.
We learned in the process. We did a second growing facility that is running now. We fixed most of the problems. But the cool thing in this last year is our company, on top of that, they specialize in delivering gas through lime, specifically CO2, nitrogen, and all that. So we've been doing it around the island, consulting and installing in growing facilities of cannabis, many of these installations. So we had the advantage that we have learned from about 20 growing facilities, all how they have the setups and they are running, because we're working inside that and trying to fix all of their problems. Basically, most of the problems that they had is ventilation, CO2,
yeah,
line, and underpower. Most of them, the biggest challenge here in Puerto Rico is everybody underpowers the use of the of the energy that they needed for these growing facilities.
That's interesting. Okay, so there's it sounds like there's some people getting into the industry there, building facilities, who perhaps don't have an extensive knowledge of the per watt requirements for a plant. You know, how many lights they're going to put out per square meter across their facility. What sort of plant numbers they're looking into? So you're suggesting they've underestimated exactly how many watts they need to put into their facility, and is that's causing them issues with cash flow, I'm assuming, and profitability?
Yes, and if that, and the second thing is, some of them are running already for 1 or 2 years, and they don't have a really good batches or continuous good batches of flowering.
So they're fluctuating in quality.
Yes.
Wow.
That's one of the biggest challenges here. So, and that becomes to try to be the most efficient building itself. And that's what they are learning right now. 3 years ago, it's not new, but here in Puerto Rico, they didn't grow in shelves. So we introduced 2 years ago, two-tier rooms. So we had like in shelves, they grow with cannabis, and they were movable. So they are in California, very common. But here in Puerto Rico, we were the first ones that we brought shelves with two tiers.
Yeah, that's awesome. So you're able to maximize the use of your footprint, which is really cool. And also, I guess, with the shelves, you're able to get the lights relatively level across your canopy. You're allowed to, I guess, spread that wattage more evenly across your canopy, I assume. I'd like to get right into that side of things. The listeners know that I'm a bit of a plant nerd on this front. I love the information on how you cultivate. But before we go there, I'm really curious about learning a little bit about Puerto Rico. So are you born and bred Puerto Rican?
No. I'm originally from South America, specifically from Ecuador. But I moved overseas about 19 years ago.
Wow.
When I graduate, I decide to move to the States, and I start working there.
Very cool. So what's brought you to Puerto Rico specifically?
Specifically, it was a company that hired me to build the first growing facility. I was supposed to be hired for 6 months, and now it's already 3 years, and I'm still working in the same industry.
So, that's awesome.
Yeah.
I was put onto you by your cousin, who's a friend of mine over here in Perth, Marcelo. He's told me that your mother, as when you were young, your mother was always interested in sort of herbal medicines and things like this. Are you able to tell me a little bit about that, and if that in some way influenced your attraction to this industry?
To be honest, on the beginning, not. My mother, it has arthritis for about 30 years. We had tried every conventional medicine. And it was not until I moved here, I learned and I saw everything and how helpful the oils are that we tried with my mother, and they do work.
Yeah.
So we were in conventional medicine for a very long time, and this really helps. I can tell you now.
Yeah, it's amazing how many people are brought into this industry from firsthand experience with generally a family member or themselves of the true efficacy of cannabis as medication. I think a lot of us are skeptical early on, and then the more you learn, the more you discover, and then you start seeing those firsthand results, and it sort of snowballs from there, doesn't it? Once you're sold on the fact that this is not snake oil, this is legitimate, and in many cases, it's in my opinion, this is just my opinion, but in many cases it's superior to some of the stuff that's being being prescribed to patients. You know, you hear these stories over and over of someone that's tried this all these medications over years and years, and when they're at the wit's end, they've exhausted all of their avenues, they decide I'll try cannabis because there's nothing left to try. And then that is the sort of golden ticket to them. That is what brings them relief. It's amazing how that occurs. Do you experience that over in Puerto Rico, that other people within the industry have been exposed to it in the same way?
I think here, at least in Puerto Rico, the people is more open-minded. That's what happened to me. I wasn't that open-minded in the beginning. But here in Puerto Rico, they have a different mind. They are more relaxed. They are more open to anything.
Island time, so island culture.
Yeah. So that's what I think it's very, very special about Puerto Rico here.
That's cool.
And not only that, I don't know if I told you that Puerto Rico, because it's an island, is trying to bring capital to the island, not just capital, but companies back to the island. There is a law that you can invest here in Puerto Rico and pay no taxes for 7 years as a company.
You don't pay taxes for your first 7 years of business.
For your company.
That's incredible.
So that's one of the biggest attraction. And most of the US-based companies are moving here to Puerto Rico because of that, the incentives that they have.
So what sort of advantage, I know it varies state to state in the US, but what sort of advantage does that bring the Puerto Rican market? What sort of taxes would a typical cultivation facility be paying, say, in California, Colorado, some of the more traditional states?
Okay, so... And that's the other crazy thing. One of the lawyers that helped us with the licensing, he wrote the manual for the cannabis when they just started. So she called the equivalent to the IRS and said, how much do you want me to tax this? And they said, you know, it's only 11.5. It's the sales tax. And that's it.
Wow.
So basically here in Puerto Rico, you don't pay taxes over the profits of cannabis, just the sales tax, and that pays the public. Okay? If this was in California, you would pay 30% over your profit, over your gross profit on top of that.
Yeah, so that's a huge advantage.
Yeah.
Are there labor advantages as well? Like, what's the relative cost of labor there? Is it cheaper than US? Is it more expensive? Is it relatively on par?
So basically, Puerto Rico, the disadvantage of being an island, it's energy.
Yeah,
that will be the most expensive. Rent. Yeah, it could be equivalent. It depends where you want to live, but it will be equivalent to the U.S. mainland. And food is about 10-15% more expensive than mainland because everything has to be imported, or most of the things are imported. But it is equal to mainland, depending where you are.
I've heard that... there can be increased expenses for things like such as your irrigation and some of your hardware, just due to that nature that a lot of the times, you know, equipment or tubing, drippers will be coming from, say, let's throw out Israel. They'll go from Israel to the US mainland first, and then they'll come down to Puerto Rico. So there's a middleman there, right? So to get to your distributor in Puerto Rico, you're paying a little more than on the mainland.
Yes, basically you will pay about between 20-30% more in those goods.
But that's a one-off expense typically. Obviously there's some level of maintenance required, but once you've got that initial outlay, it's not like tax where you're paying 30% year on year forever.
Exactly. Yes. So the biggest challenge is just to get to the point to start a growing facility. That will be the biggest point. And because cannabis cannot be or cannot go through banks, it has to be all money from investors, private lenders. So that's the biggest challenge here. And if you think about 30% in the goods, everything that you imported, that they are more expensive here in Puerto Rico. Yes, it gets expensive, but the good part is you don't have many competition to that.
Yeah, so, that's cool. Yeah, yeah. So you're not a flooded market.
Yes, it's not a flooded market like California, Ohio.
And as you touched on, being limited to indoor cultivation as well, you know, it takes far less capital to put up a greenhouse, a few tunnels, and run some crops, and obviously straight outdoor is not applicable over there, clearly. So you do diminish the number of potential suitors to the industry, which sounds really cool. So I guess when I talk about those hurdles and the capital required for startup, obviously when you set up your company, you've come up with an idea. I want to get into this game. I can see how it works. I can see the potential. You've got to surround yourself with good people. That's really evident to me these days, that those that are successful are surrounded by good people as well. They get themselves the right people around them that can share the same vision and help to achieve common goals. So tell me a bit about your team. Who were the people that you went to right at the start of the journey, and who's really helped you get this up and running?
So, okay, one of the biggest persons that is being next to us into our project is Marcelo. Marcelo is one of the founders, okay?
Oh, that's cool. I wasn't aware of that. That's really cool. He did tell me that he'd flown to Puerto Rico and it's amazing and all this. And yeah, that's cool. Very cool.
Yes, you know. Marcelo is a visionary. Is a fighter. You know, he had the same idea. We shared the same ideas, and he was one of the persons that helped me to develop this project. Additional to that, I have a lawyers. We have a very good team of lawyers, and we have a director of operations. He comes from a long line in chemistry in organic.
So very interesting.
Friend of mine too.
So he's a biochemist. And, is that the nature of it?
He's a biochemist. Yep. He's a biochemist, but for inorganic chemistry.
Yeah. Okay.
So he is one of the biggest guys or the backbone of the company, and it is interesting. But after that, we have a team of growers. And because there is no university for cannabis, your growers are going to be one of your biggest assets. So we team up with a company here that is already established in the market since 2016. We have trade work with them, and we've been working these last 2 years next to them. So they are in the market. They are one of the few successful growing facilities, but they are very small. They are all their product that they have, they sell them by themselves. So they have a growing facility and they have a dispensary, and they are trying to open a manufacturer too. So that's our team, and that's our team of growers that we have. And so
that's cool.
We learned that we had to be next to the most knowledgeable people that we can to try to be successful.
To me, that appears the most successful approach in these larger, more professional facilities that I've come across in the industry. The combination of people who have the technical knowledge of building companies and facilities and things like that, and you combine that with people who have an innate knowledge of the plant and the plant's requirements. Some of these people, they feel an energy or a synergy with the plant, you know, and you get these two groups of people together and particularly if they really get along, you start to see some really amazing results, don't you? Because you've got your technicians in the business, the building, the construction world, bringing the best of their assets, and you get the technical know-how of those long-time passionate growers. So that sounds like it's a real winner for you. That's really cool. You mentioned manufacture. Here in Australia, we have various levels of licensing. Are there various licenses available to those that wish to cultivate and produce over there?
Yes, there is a different license for everything. So you can be one of the least expensive licenses will be a dispensary. Okay. So only that one only can distribute. They can buy from a growing facility and they only distribute. That's the smallest license that you can get. So with that, the other license will be a growing facility. That's the most expensive license, but that gives you a chance of manufacturing license. Because the growing facilities, when they cut the flowers, they have all the leftovers from the flower in the cuts. It's called shake. Usually that's their most precious material to sell it to the manufacturers. Because there is not many percentage of that, usually the growing facilities become a manufacturer also. So they apply for two licenses. One for growing and one for manufacture.
Okay,
and
cool.
Usually they stay in the loop with that.
So the typical approach is go for the initial license for the growers or the cultivation, and then once is it first harvest that you would apply for your manufacture from there?
Yeah, before you get your first harvest.
Yes. Okay. Yeah, sure.
Before even to build it.
What sort of processing times have they had over there? When you put your license application in, how long did it take the government to process that application and provide you with your license?
So if all your paperwork given in rule and everything is approved by your building, by the codes of the building, the distance from schools and everything, it could take 6 to 8 months. But usually you build it on pair. Well, you're building your growing facilities. So when you finish your building, you will get your license. You get a pre-approval, but you get your license or your license stamped when you finish your building.
Yeah.
So that's a process about eight months about.
That's pretty good. Here in Australia, it's probably double that. So that's quite good. Is it cost intensive to get that license application out there? You know, here in Australia, a typical approach would be to hire a number of consultants, lawyers, et cetera, and you start talking several hundred thousand dollars just on your consults to help you put that application together. Is it really intensive like that where you really need to maybe outsource some of your applications? You mentioned you've got some lawyers around you that helped out. I'm just wondering how intensive is that process of compiling your application?
So the most challenging in your license process is to secure the capital to have enough money per square footage that you have to have deposited
sure.
in a bank account to build that. So that will secure your license.
And do you need that when you
got through banks?
Do you need that when you first lodge your application, or do you need that when they're about to authorize the license or permit? So does the cash have to be there right when you lodge that application, or do they contact you and say, "Hey, we're about to process this this license. The one thing we need to see the money in the bank." Do they give you that chance, or when they receive that paperwork and they're flicking through it? Do they go straight into your bank account and go, this guy doesn't have the cash yet? That's a no-go.
No. So basically you need a proof of money, a fund, to get your application.
Wow.
Started.
So there's a bit of risk there on that initial outlay for that cultivation license from an investor's viewpoint in that they can put the money there and that application can be just straight up refused. Then obviously the founder has access to that cash, then it becomes a bit messy, I would assume. You obviously have the initial license, which I'm sure in terms of investment and things would give a bit of confidence to an investor. When you went for that initial capital, was there hesitancy there that, okay, I'm going to put this cash in, but it's going to sit there for maybe 8-10 months until we even know if this company is going to be anything, if it's going to exist?
So basically when that you get a pre-approval, so all the requirements that you needed is just to finish and complete all the tasks so the growing facility can run. Yeah.
Sure.
There is no way why they should cancel your license other than you hadn't finished your growing facility.
Yeah, okay. Very cool. Did you start construction prior to having the license issued, or did you hold off on that?
Yes, and the first and the second project we did that. Yeah. Because it takes us about 8 to 10 months or 8 to a year, depending on the size of the project, just to build it. That once that you have so much money invested and start the license process and wait one more year, it is too much investment to wait sitting on.
Yeah, you got to get it moving.
So we build it together. Yes, you have to start moving together.
What would happen in the case of a refusal of a license with that building then? Are there alternative uses for it? Suppose they came back to you and said, you know, there's applicants that are not fit for purpose or something along these lines. I'm sure you're confident going in, but do you design your facility in that, okay, this can be repurposed, should we not receive that license?
It doesn't. I don't know if it happened. What we did is before we grab any building, we have to make an extensive paperwork checkup that all the facilities, energy, water, and everything has to qualify for a license.
Sure.
So yeah. Basically,
so you're confident going in already. You know, regardless, you're going to make it happen. You're going to meet all of the requirements one way or another.
Yes, you have to. Before even we get the building, we do those background markups.
So you
for a building itself.
Cool. So you get your cultivation license, and you don't have your manufacturer license. So your first harvest, do you effectively have to on-sell that harvest to a middleman that has a manufacturer license who then moves on to a dispensary? Is that the link, the chain?
No. Basically, or the idea here is the growing facility sell directly to dispensaries.
Okay, cool.
We just sell it in a pound or 500 grams sealed bags, and they relabel it by their dispensary, by their name or brand. It depends how they want to sell it.
Okay, cool. So the dispensaries are branding your cannabis. Do you have your own branding established also? Is there Aria Terra logos and branding on dispensary shelves, or is everything rebadged?
It will show you that comes from Arietera, because every batch has to be tested.
Yes.
Okay. And it will show which one is the source from.
Sure, okay.
So it will show our certificate. Even though it may be rebranded for a dispensary, it will show it comes from us.
That's cool. So you mentioned testing. I'm fascinated by this one because over here in Australia, we have very stringent testing requirements. How stringent are they over there in the US? Is it quite low percentage to get it over the line? And how much of a challenge does the testing present to you? And off the back of that, when you send a batch to a lab, how large can that single batch be?
Okay. So a crop, it's a batch, okay?
Oh,
so we
okay.
have to test every batch.
Yep.
We have to test every batch. And you can even test it twice for quality. And that will give you basically the level of your cannabis. You can sell it as premium, super premium, mm-hmm. or regular. And if it comes back with any imperfections, any impurities, you can sell that to a manufacturer so they can distill
uh-huh, yeah, your, okay.
Okay.
Is there a concentrate market over there? Is there a reasonably sound concentrate market in the dispensaries?
I'm sorry.
So your concentrates, so with the manufacturers when they distill or use CO2 extraction, for example, what's the market potential there? So are those guys growing in number of sales? Is the market growing? So people that are attracted to those concentrates as opposed to raw flower, is that a popular thing in Puerto Rico, or is it not so popular?
We've been learning and doing some studies. We find out that oil is the second thing that they sell the most after the flowers. It's surprising the amount of money that you will get from oil or oil cartridge. So right now, it is a tendency that they are trying to get about 50-50, 50% flowering and 50% oils or resins.
Okay, that's cool. Okay, so it is popular. I'd like to go into now your facility a bit, because obviously I'm quite fascinated by layouts and things like that. When we walk in the front door of your facility, are you a multi-story facility over there?
So the challenge for our facility is that we're growing in a three-tier level.
Sure.
So basically what we learned with this project before is as much as we can store in the smallest room, we will save energy. So basically our rooms are like a refrigerator box. They are ultra-sealed, very efficient, tall boxes with three stories of cannabis plants.
That's cool.
All those shelves move because we don't have a space in between them.
That's cool. So you've got variable height racking and you can even move laterally with that racking. Is that correct?
Yes. It has a pulley and they move to each side.
Very cool.
That's the way that we have learned to be most efficient. We can be in phase three when we have the 11 rooms. Completed, we can be about 55% to 60% an average more efficient than any regular growing facility in Puerto Rico.
Wow.
And it's because it gets so big and so compact. Basically that we are building in a space of land instead of a house, we are building a tall tower.
Yeah, that's
with many
cool.
So that will be like we compare Ayatera to any other growing facility.
So you're going through another stage now of expansion to further refine your facility. Is that correct? So you're going to really maximize your profit off the back of that.
Yes. So our project is big. We have divided in three phases. Phase one has six rooms. Phase two, it will convert those six rooms to the mothering and flowering rooms, and we will build eight bigger rooms. And in phase three, we're developing three more rooms for growing and also a manufacturing area to try to all our product be manufactured also in the growing facilities.
That's cool. That is really cool. What are the security requirements over there? Do you have requirements for the number of locked doors prior to entering the facility? Fixed walls, security guards. What's the requirements there?
So the biggest, because we have everything movable, and the biggest challenge for us is the camera. We have about 900 cameras in the whole building.
Oh wow.
Because all our flowers and plants move and you have to see everything.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So wow. We have rooms between 80 and 120 cameras per room.
Oh, wow. Okay. So that's significant. Do you need armed guards or anything along those lines?
No, we have three companies has to check all our cameras. We have an armed guard in the entrance, but basically everything is fenced, okay? Everything is secured. If anything happens, it will go through three companies of security, external security companies that are watching all our cameras.
That's cool. Let's talk about water. Now, I assume you get reasonable rainfall over there, but is that an option for you to harvest rainwater? I would assume you're not going to be able to collect enough to run your crops. Where do you source your water? Are you sourcing scheme water from the state, or are you bringing your water up from a bore? Where do you source this water?
So in we also divide that in three phases. In phase one, where you're seeing public water. Mm-hmm. From the city. And phase two, we have drilled two of those wells so we can get our own water. And in phase three, we are getting our water back from all the dehumidifiers and air conditioners, plus all the return water from the reverse osmosis to purify the water. So that will get into a tank and sand filters and trying to back to the reverse osmosis system again.
That's cool. Very good. All right, let's get into do you use UV treatment on your water after that process? Or
yes, we do use reverse osmosis and UV after that.
Very good. And how intensive, like what are your water requirements currently? So per day, how many liters are you pumping in?
So in phase three, or on a full power, we will need about 1,800 gallons of water every day.
Okay, and are you recycling that water? Are you running a closed system, or is it run to waste?
That system in phase three, it will get about 30 to 40% return back from the humidifiers and the air conditioners back.
Sure. Very cool. Okay, so while we're talking about air conditioners and dehumidifiers, how extensive was the process of setting up your HVAC? I assume the high humidity becomes a challenge for you, particularly with the density that you're running with this multi-tiered system. What are you running for your HVAC? How significant is it to get that up and running?
To have an idea, we have running about 550 tons in phase three of air conditioner.
Wow.
And each of our rooms, it takes about 45 to 4,900 pints a day of humid.
Okay. And then you're running AC as well to keep cool, I'm assuming. Do you know off the top of your head how many BTUs you'd be requiring from your AC?
Okay. So we run about 15 tons per room. So it is about 180,000 BTUs per room.
Yeah, well, what's the sizing of your rooms?
The rooms are 24, in phase three, 24 feet high, and the rooms are about 900 square feet each.
Sure.
And they hold about 2,500 plants each room.
Wow. Okay. So you're going, because of your tiers, obviously. Wow. That's productive. Very cool. Very cool. Now let's talk about we've gone over the water sourcing. Let's talk about how we get that water to the plants. Your irrigation system. You're not hand watering, I assume. You're running drip systems.
No, everything at that scale, everything that we have learned from the first project, it has to be mechanical.
Yes. Yep.
Yeah, there is too much plants. 2,500 rooms, plants per room. Or either one or two persons is too much.
But so it seems to be a thing in the US, right? That a lot of these facilities, even though they're large, they've got people watering, hand watering, and doing it by sight. I guess the notion of that is that they're getting up close to the plants. They're able to visualize the individual plant's health and things along those lines. They're able to fine tune and cater to an individual plant. But on scale, that just seems not all that feasible to me. So I agree. I think mechanical drip systems, perfectly metered, is the way to go. Do you allow your medium? Well, firstly, what medium do you use? Are you running cocoa or rock wool? Or
we tend to use right now rock wool. We have found that it's the one that it's the most efficient. So we get that return, because remember that any water that you have to put it in, you have to take it out from your humidifier, and that's energy. So rock wool gives you the chance to evaporate or drip everything out more efficiently.
Very cool. And per square meter, how many plants per square meter are you running?
So we have about, it depends on the variety of the plant,
sure,
but you can have 12 up to 16 plants, and that's they cool. are dwarfs.
Yep, that's nice. That's nice numbers.
And that's then in a 4x4 light.
And you're running LEDs, I assume, because you're on a multi-tiered system.
Yes, we run 645 watts lamps.
Who have you chosen to go with for your spectrum? Which manufacturers have you gone with?
The last time, the one that we use is either Fluence.
Okay, cool.
Okay. That's one of the last manufacturers we had used, and they are very successful.
Yeah, they're very reputable. I guess four-tiered setups particularly, they're very highly regarded. That's really cool. You spoke about your spacing is different depending on the plants, the genetics. I'm curious, where did you source your genetics? When you got up and running, did you go straight for clones so that you could get a head start to harvest, or did you go from seed?
No. We have an agreement. For the first three batches, we're getting clones. At the same time, we are getting growing or mothers, and after the third batch we will grow our own clones from the mothers.
Yeah, that's cool.
So
okay,
it's just to keep running the business that we need clones first.
Okay, cool. So with your mother room, how many cultivars do you hope to maintain in your library when you're at peak performance?
In first phase, we're trying to get all these seed varieties. At the end, we will get 11 varieties running. Okay. But that doesn't mean that, we don't have a different variety. So we will be testing which ones in that space will yield the most. And we will keep 11 varieties for
That's cool.
these.
Do you intend on doing any breeding of your own genetics?
At the moment, because of the scale that it's so massive, we have
no intentions
to do that yet. But in third phase, when we do manufacture, we have a space for that. So we'll be
That's cool.
trying to do that.
That's awesome. Okay, so Javier, which varieties and which strains are working for you out there? Which ones are popular in the market? What's the winners for you so far?
Right now, our top shelf flowers are Platinum Gorilla, Shelf Triple Burger, Sour Cheese, Mango Crush, and Kush Mint. So they are some of them, and this will go with a trend. Depends what the client wants. So basically, they change every 6 months to a year to a different variety because the customers want to prove something different every time.
Yeah, that's cool. Yeah, so it's a sort of fashionable aspect to it, isn't it? So it's always going to be evolving for you. You may find cultivars that have worked really well for you on the cultivation side of things that don't have great market appeal eventually, so you eventually work them out of the facility and bring in some new cultivars.
Exactly.
That's very cool. Let's talk about the market there in Puerto Rico. Do you have numbers on patients with medical cards over there? Do you, what is the current market size there?
Okay. We have like a census from 2 years ago. Right now, because of the pandemic and everything, this changed the numbers. They were not updated. 2 years ago, they had 114,000 patients. And they bring $22 million a month. And it's about $500 million. And that's for 27 growing facilities only.
Wow. Okay. So that's amazing, because those numbers are what's the population there in Puerto Rico, just out of interest?
Right now in the island, I'm not exactly, it's around 4,700,000.
Wow, okay. So you have a high percentage of medical users. That's really cool. What's the process to get a license over there on medical users card?
So it is very easy. You can walk to one of the dispensaries. They will have a doctor there, or you can make it through a phone call or a web chat. Okay. It's a very easy process. It will take you sometimes 5 to 15 minutes, and it will cost you from $20 to $40, depend when you get the license.
Is it issued on the spot?
Or where you get the license. Yes.
Wow.
You can get it on the spot, or yeah.
So those numbers you just gave me with the 16,000 patients currently, 114,000, which is census results from a couple of years ago. So do you believe that number has grown since then?
We believe it has grown because of the demand. We estimate a patient spends about $369 to $370 a month in cannabis.
What's the general demographic of patients? Is it reasonably even across the age spectrum, or is one particular age group typically accessing medical cannabis more than others?
I think here, at least in Puerto Rico, you find a very wide variety. You find a young generation, and also you do find people in the middle age with medical problems.
That's very interesting. Very, very cool. Beyond that, so I've heard in some of the things you've said, you're going to expand your process. You've got various stages of scaling up your facility. So are you're looking clearly to increase your market share of that $500 million annual turnover in the industry there in Puerto Rico. Do you have projections on what sort of returns you'd be hoping for? So what relative to your cost of operation, are you comfortable discussing what sort of margins you're working with?
Okay, so in phase one, we have about 30 to 40% margin. Okay. Phase two, it grows 40 to 50% margin. And in phase three, we can get it up to 70% margin profit.
Wow. Okay. That's cool.
And that's when we think our growing facility will be at the most or his peak. And after that, we're thinking to go solar.
Cool.
The idea of going this size or trying to develop the three phases is if for some reason the market changed, we can be sustainable still.
Yep.
Yeah. Most of the smaller facilities, if the market shifts for about 10-20%, are out of the market.
Yeah, okay. You've got some room, you've got some comfort, and you're going to become more comfortable as you go through the stages. You mentioned Martello was a co-founder. I actually had no idea of that. So can foreign investors get involved in what you're doing?
Yes. We are growing phase two right now. So we're looking for investors. We try to expand as fast as we can so we can keep growing. And after second phase, it will be faster for us to grow to third phase.
Okay, so you're doing share, you're releasing shares in your company effectively.
Yes, we have shares of our company.
Are you publicly listed or are you private?
Right now, no, we're not publicly listed because you need to be on the market for at least 3 years.
Okay, cool. Federally, with the US, is medical federally legal there yet, or is it still federally banned?
Medicinal, not. We are waiting here, and it's been on the table for many months. And if you see in US mainland, last year they switched to recreational in 28 states. So it's been changing. We're waiting this to happen here in Puerto Rico, and it will eventually will come. Mm-hmm. It will be like buying alcohol or tobacco.
Sure. What are the challenges there with banking? Because I'm familiar with, you know, in say California or Colorado, particularly early on, the banks wouldn't touch the cash. So has that evolved? Are banks now associating with cannabis companies, or is there any institution that will align themselves with
it? Yes. So yes and no. The banks still, they don't take the money from cannabis, but you have like a co-op that they will take your money for a percentage.
Okay.
There's only two right now in Puerto Rico that they are allowed to manage funds.
Okay. Okay. So that's overseen by the state. And there's a license associated with performing those actions.
Yeah.
Fascinating. That is really, really cool. It sounds to me as though, if there's interested parties, say here in Australia or any of our listeners abroad, would Martello be the right person to sort of facilitate anything along those lines, or what's the process there?
Yes. Martello is one of the founders. He has the right of the company too.
It's just because I know him here. There's a personal relationship there. So if people wanted to approach me and I put them in touch with Martello, and if there are curious people or interested parties, so he can take care of that and help them get involved with what you're doing.
Yes.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yes, that will be the most, because, you know, Marcelo has a business there. He's been established for many years. He has a reputation.
He does have a reputation.
Probably that will be the best.
But his reputation is for cars and the auto industry. I had no idea he was actually involved in this space. He just mentioned he's got a cousin that's got this facility in Puerto Rico, and that sounded really cool to me. So, wow, okay, he's got his fingers in a few pies. That's interesting. That's really cool. All right, so for the listeners, if you want me to put you in touch with Martello, just send me an email at canterpodcast@gmail.com, and I'll give you the number for Martello, and we'll go from there. Hopefully he can help you out. It sounds like your numbers are very, very solid over there, so I think there's good potential for people if they wanted to get involved. That being said, obviously, I can't give financial advice. I'm not a banker or an investment broker or anything along those lines. I don't understand that side of the business. But it sounds to me, from somebody who's fascinated with facilities and margins that the facilities are able to produce, it sounds to me like you've got a good thing going there. Slightly off topic now, because now that I'm back recording, I've really, in the last 12 months or so, really a lot of my focus has gone towards the world and the way the world's evolving, Javier. And I don't want to put you in any hot water or anything along those lines, but I like hearing the way people think about the way the world's evolving. Are you able to just give me some thoughts on, are you feeling positive about the future of the way, I guess, our globe is going, or do you feel like there's some challenges ahead for us? What's your optimism for the future?
I think cannabis still is developing. I don't think this year is going to be easy for anyone or any investors at all. But I think cannabis has a lot of potential still.
That's cool.
It is a growing industry. It's growing fast. And once they loosen a little bit, it will be much easier for cannabis.
How's the economy performing over there aside from cannabis? Is the economy performing well? Employment numbers stable? Like, is there optimism in the general market across the board over there?
They are stable here. I'm not sure if they are growing or not, but they are stable.
Very interesting. Very cool, Javier. It's been an absolute pleasure, mate. I've really enjoyed this chat. You've been super easy to chat with, which is really cool. You clearly know a lot about what you're doing. Occasionally, you do meet some founders and CEOs who you can see referred a lot of the work to others, which is of course fine. But you clearly get engrossed and involved in every stage of what's going on out there, because you have a knowledge of your building, your construction, your licensing, your cultivation methodologies. It's really cool to meet CEOs and founders that are across the board, have their finger on the pulse of what's going on with their company. So I really appreciate you coming onto the show, mate, and wish to thank you for spending this time with me. Puerto Rico sounds really cool. Martello's told me that he's gone over there and it's been a really good eye opener for him. He said it's magic. He said he would move there in a heartbeat. So that sounds amazing. Sounds like you're on a good ticket. So what's it like over there lifestyle wise? Is it a salsa sort of lifestyle, chilling at the beach, bit of salsa? What's the go there?
Yeah, right now at this phase is a lot of work around, but you know, even in the worst of our days, you can end about at 6 p.m. next to the beach.
That's cool.
Having a drink or seeing the sunset, and it still is not bad for a day of the day.
Absolutely. That's awesome. Man. Hey man, thank you very much for joining me. I really appreciate it. As I said, guys, if this sounds like something you'd like to be a part of, shoot me an email and I'll let Martello know that there's people that are interested in what you're doing. I don't usually do this. I don't like the concept of Canter selling for other companies, but I love the sound of your numbers. And it sounds like you're doing things all the right way. So I appreciate that, mate. And I'm happy to give you a plug in this case. So thank you very much for your time. It's been an absolute pleasure. And keep in touch, man. I want to hear how these next stages go for you.
Yes, and we will wait for you anytime here in Puerto Rico.
Absolutely, man. I'd love to get over there and have a visit. Maybe next time Marcelo is coming over, he can shoot me a ticket at come over and run a second interview or something, mate. It looks really cool over there. So
yes, that will be amazing.
That's awesome, man. Thank you very much, Javier. Take care, mate.
Thank you for listening to another episode of Canter. Any guest views and opinions expressed in this podcast are those of the guests and not necessarily those of the hosts. Canter strongly suggests listeners research local, state, and federal laws and regulations before conducting any cannabis-related activity.